Welcome to Church Drunk, a spirited conversation about faith, reason, and libations. There's my tinkling.
There it is.
Ice cubes in my alcoholic beverage. Pour yourself one and join us as we continue our summer reading list.
Yeah.
A few things to know. Number one, we use adult language.
Yes.
Although we try to keep it on point.
Only as necessary.
Yeah, we have a reason.
Sometimes it's not fucking
mostly
necessary.
Mostly I'm really mad.
But yeah, you know, variety is the spice of life. We like to have all of our vocabulary in play.
Yeah, everything's fair game. And along those same lines, you know, we are engaging with our faith and our spirituality, and that means we might tiptoe right up to or pole vault over the line of heresy and blasphemy. We mostly don't mean it, except when we do, and that's because we're Catholic.
I like the image of pole vaulting over it. I feel like it's a joyful crossing of the line.
Well, if you're going to do it, you might as well just go ahead.
Yeah, exactly.
Go big. You can always walk it back.
Right.
That's what Jesus said. Anyway, we're Catholic. You don't have to be. We're glad you're here. We're full of merriment and mirth because it's still technically summer and we're talking about books.
Is. Yes.
We also are holding cold drinks.
Literature nerds.
I'm Dizzy, joined as always by my tipsy co-host guest. What are you sipping, sir?
We're calling it the Jitterbug Perfume, I think.
Oh, yeah. Love it.
We have invented a new cocktail today, and in the glass is honey and lemon with absinthe and gin and a splash of fizzy water over the top of that.
Yes.
And then topped off with a little bit of thyme and Thai basil because we are all about the fragrance with this cocktail.
It smells divine.
Mm.
It smells like you could chase it across time and space and maybe like, forever.
Like you're rolling in an herb garden. Yeah.
It really is wonderful, and Guess is gracious in saying, we invented this, he did it, and I'm drinking it, and you should pour something similar and think about the lovely readings of Jitterbug Perfume.
I wish I could give you, like, ratios of all those ingredients, but keep adding until it tastes right.
I feel like it's now just, like, a church-drunk tradition to be, like, pour something in a glass.
Yeah, pour
shake it around.
Pour in a glass. Shake
taste it.
Shake it 40 times.
Pour more. Shake it 40 times. Pour more things in it. Okay.
Yeah, so we are, if you haven't guessed yet.
Yeah.
Getting into Jitterbug Perfume today. That's our book. And so that's our drink. That's our book. It's by Tom Robbins. Diz, why is this such a wonderful book and such a wonderful author?
And that seems like a really easy question, but it's a difficult question.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful book because I love it. It's a wonderful author because he's wordy. We need to get into it more than that. But we were challenged, right? Like, how can we encapsulate this book? Because it's a really long book.
Yeah.
And it's a very complicated book.
Yeah, not even just long pages-wise. I mean, it is. It's a thick book. But it's not, you know, it's not...
It's probably shorter than some other books we've highlighted
it's
here.
It's not crazy Russian literature long or anything like that. But it feels like you have entered into something very big when you read this book because the story is a very big story.
And partly because the author... you know, Tom Robbins is a well-known, or at least, you know, somewhat well-known, I think, author, and he is very dense in his wordings.
Yes.
So, like, it's not a book that you can, not like an easy read, I would ever say, because each sentence is, like, carefully crafted.
Yes.
And each word just is so right, and it's great, but it's, like, it's a dense read.
Right. And we've touched on Tom Robbins before on a couple of other podcasts. Yeah. That we've done, and you know, we both claim him as our favorite author.
Yes.
And yet neither of us claim one of his books as our favorite book, just because in part because we like all of them so much, it's tough to pick a favorite. You are definitely like, this is your favorite Tom Robbins
book. This is my favorite Tom Robbins book. I was like, yeah, I don't have a hard time saying
that. But it's like...
But I love them all.
Is it your favorite book? Like, it's impossible to say because there's so much going on, and that's the case, I think, with all of his books. Like, he doesn't tell a simple story.
No.
He tells always something that brings in, you know, something that resonates with us because there's like supernatural elements in play, generally speaking.
Yeah.
He is like the wordiest wordsmith in the world and you just have to get lost
in the language. Yes.
You know, so we've talked, I think, a couple times about like Another Roadside Attraction on previous episodes, which is one of my favorites of Tom Robbins. And we've talked about like the fact that when you read one of his books, you are just along for the ride.
It's such a good ride.
Have to detach from trying to even understand what's happening in that paragraph and just let it wash over you.
But even his writing, like, kind of helps and encourages you to do that. Yeah. Like, he's like, let me shove you off the edge of, like, feeling like you know what the story is about. Like, you just be in the moment and go along with it. All right, so to try to address what, because we're not talking just about Tom Robbins, we're talking about Jitterbug Perfume today.
Yes.
So in an attempt to show how difficult this is, we have each composed a one sentence, like, blurb. If we were going to say, how would you sum, if we were writing the Wikipedia article, what would we, what would be our little caption? What would be our blurb? You want to go first?
Sure, sure. Okay. Yeah. So Jitterbug Perfume is a story about love and immortality set in two different ages and three modern cities wherein gods and tricksters huff magical perfume and have so much of the sex, learning that only by lightening up can things get truly heavy.
Oh, you really brought it home there.
Right, right.
I love it. And I love that we're so different in our sentences.
It says, like, this everything and nothing about the book. Yeah.
All right. So I said, Jitterbug Perfume is a rollicking ride. Because it is a ride.
That it is.
Across time and around the world. The cast of unforgettable characters each follows their nose and heart in pursuit of immortality, or whatever that means.
Yeah, yeah.
So we talked, we highlighted totally different things, and those are all things in this book.
Yeah, and so, dear listener, we're not necessarily going to give you a chapter-by-chapter rundown of what happens in this story, because we would get confused trying to do it, you would get confused trying to listen to it. It weaves together different storylines. So that take place in different eras, and there are common threads that run through them. And it's a book that's all about fragrance, because there is this this perfume,
fragrance,
an actual perfume that comes into play in kind of guiding people through these ages and on this quest for immortality.
Yeah, the perfume bottle and the perfume itself is almost a character in the book.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
it's important. And I've actually, side note, I've actually heard that there is the real perfume shop in New Orleans that you can visit.
Really?
Yes. So, new bucket list item.
Yeah, it kind of, it does. It zips you back and forth around the world. You're you're in India one chapter, you're in New Orleans the next chapter, you're in Paris, you're
ancient Bohemia.
Ancient Bohemia. Yeah, like you're all over the place both in time and space.
Yeah.
And as soon as you understand that that's what's going to happen, right? And like, it's one of those books where I feel like you get halfway through it and somebody goes, oh, hey, what's that book about? And you're like, I have no idea. Like, I have no clue.
Yeah.
You just kind of got to stick it out.
But you could say who this book is about. So this kind of brings me to one of the parts. I'm like, you know what? We can't tell the plot. And we wouldn't try, because you should read the book if you want the plot.
Yeah.
But we could say a little bit about characters.
Right. Because
this is a very character-rich book.
Yes. So at its heart, it's a love story.
It
is. It's about...
Yes and no?
Yeah.
Like, half of the story is. So there's two main storylines, and one of them is a love story.
Yeah. There's Alibar and Kudra, who are wonderful characters. I don't know if I just spoiled it. I don't know if you're going to pick one of them as your favorites, but...
I wasn't, but I love them both.
Okay, good, because I wasn't going to pick one of them. So we should talk a little bit about Alibar and Kudra, who are the lovers in the story, and their love affair starts back in an ancient age, so they're kind of the back in time story.
Although they're not from the same time period.
Right, yes.
So just to throw a wrench, this is why you can't...
This is why you can't really tell the story. But they are both from their own respective ancient ages.
Not contemporary time.
Yeah. And they cross paths, and their story plays out, you know, like fall in love in like a timeless kind of love, you know? And the story of their love is one of these threads that moves through the book.
And it's such a great story. Like, I love both of those characters. I feel like Tom Robbins gives his readers a gift in that, like, while his characters are not perfect, he doesn't make you, like, suffer with a flawed character that you love. Like, the characters that you love are lovable. Like, they're great, and you root for them.
Yes.
So I love both. And Alibar,
I think, I mean, like,
Kudra.
I think as a writer, Tom Robbins tends to be in love with the characters that he writes about.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's necessarily
that's
like a generic statement that you would say about a lot of authors, but I think it really shines through with Tom Robbins. Like, he loves, he has like an attraction. Like, he falls in love with the characters
and
that he is writing.
Explicitly describes their excessive
love-making. Occasionally.
No, I think it's like a hallmark. Yes. I know you're being sarcastic of Tom Robbins' novels that like the love pair comes together and it's like they really love each other in all the ways one could love somebody.
Like, I think physically. The first time that I read a Tom Robbins like sex scene in a book, I was like, oh man, like this is kind of racy.
But it's not like erotica. It's just like very.
But it's very graphic. But like,
it's not going to turn you on, but they're really turned on.
By like book two or three, I hit the point where like, yeah, like it's not necessarily going
to. It's not like describing like, it's not like, I don't want it to sound like it's like romance novels.
Right. It's not, this isn't 50 Shades of Grey.
No.
But what it is a book where like, as soon as you, like I read, you know, I've read pretty much everything of Robbins and after the first couple, you know, like by around book three, you read it and you get to know the characters and you're like, oh man, these characters are going to get so busy later on. And I'm really interested to see what Tom Robbins has to say about it.
So true. So true. All right. So they have a rich love.
They have a very rich love, a deep and abiding love. They have known one another.
I feel like we're going to just go off into like second coming territory here.
So many comings.
Okay.
Yeah. Alibar and Kudra.
Yep.
Fantastic characters.
Good times.
There's a whole other cast of characters, too many to name, that take place on another, you know, separate track of storyline that takes place in modern times. And they all have a role to play in kind of the eventual end point,
which ties everything together. The perfume and the, like, the research of immortality. So the topic of immortality is, like, an out front topic in this book.
Yes.
There's, in one storyline, people researching this.
Yeah.
And then the perfume ties into it. And that's a whole, like, the perfume industry.
Yes.
And two competing, like, companies almost. Which sounds boring and weird, but it's not.
It's not. Yeah. Okay. It gets Robbins'd.
We got to stay out of this. All right. What is a favorite? Okay.
Okay. Yeah. So I will go with one of my favorite characters from the book is Marcel. So,
you stole it.
Oh, no.
Okay.
Well, there's so many to choose from.
Okay. It's fine.
Do you want me
to
pick a different one?
No. Go ahead. Okay. Tell about Marcel.
So Marcel is the French perfumer.
Marcel.
And he's got this like giant magical nose that like can pick up on every essence of everything.
Yeah.
And when Marcel is like getting into making his perfumes and stuff, it brings to light this whole like evolution of not just the human species, but all species. And like there are certain senses, you know, like the sense of smell that connect to different parts of your brain, you know, like scent connects to memory. And then from memory, you get to immortality and it all kind of starts to make sense in the context of the book. So Marcel is just this goofy Frenchman who, with a huge nose, who makes lovely perfumes, and he's just a fun character.
Okay, there are so many characters in this book, and you described Marcel very well, and it's true. But the reason that I would have picked Marcel as my favorite is because of how weird he is. Marcel is such a weird character. Yeah. He's like a smelling Jesus, but he also wears a mask.
Yes. Do you remember? Oh, that's right. I forgot that he wears the mask.
Marcel, if we're talking about weird Tom Robbins sexual things, Marcel, in addition to his like huge nose and gift for smell, has also this like predilection where he likes to wear a dolphin mask.
Yeah.
And I think it has a sexual component, although that, thank you, Jesus, is not explained in detail.
Not explicitly, well, and there it, like, it's, he looks at things from the grand scheme, right? So he sees humans as a species, and they are part of the evolution of all animals on the planet. And some animals have a greater sense of smell than others. And for him, smell is like really, really important in a perhaps bordering on like fetishistic way.
It's really special. The other reason I connect with Marcel is because he has a brother who has to like try to like keep him in line.
Yeah.
And that's just real close to home
that,
for me.
That strikes close to the heart, huh?
Yep. Yeah. Shout out to my family listeners. I feel for Claude. For Claude.
We are all Claude.
I don't even care about Claude, but like, you know, it's his job.
All right, so I stole yours.
Yeah, you stole Marcel.
But I think we've killed enough time
that
you can be on your toes and pick a second favorite character.
Okay, second favorite character. I'm actually going to just pivot back to the perfume bottle. Because I don't love a lot of the other characters in the storyline of, like, the weird company thing.
Right.
With
the
like,
dueling.
Wigs Danny Boy. He's a little too weird for me.
Dueling companies.
Anyway, so they're great. But I would pick the perfume bottle.
Yeah, so you've got a theory about this.
The perfume bottle is this beautiful blue bottle. Right. And it's actually been around as long as, like, any of the other characters. So the bottle is also traveling through time. It has just a few drops of perfume in it.
Yeah.
And it just ignites everybody into this frenzy of, like, where did it come from and how can we find it? And that's, like, where the race comes from.
Yeah.
And the perfume bottle even travels, like, to the very end of the story.
Yeah, it does. It's almost like a talisman, sort of, that goes through that the entire story. And so your thought is the perfume bottle itself is a character.
I think it is. Yeah. I think it really is. It has a shape and a color and that's and a description.
That's a very Robbins thing to do.
I think Tom Robbins.
An inanimate object and turn it into something that you really do care about in the context of the story. Like, it is...
When I described think of in such detail. The book and the characters I most love, it's Alibar and Kudra, it's Marcel.
Yep.
I can't remember the little girl's name, which means I do not love her as much as I love the blue bottle.
Oh, the little one in New Orleans?
Yeah.
Priscilla? Is that who you're
maybe.
Thinking of?
Yeah. Okay. Yep. So, and then the blue bottle.
Yeah. I do love Pan. I love Pan in this
book.
Oh
my gosh. You know what? Tell us why you love Pan. Well, you get a twofer.
So Pan is...
we like the same stuff in this
Pan
book.
Is the god Pan. You know, like half, what, Fawn? Is that Pan? And he plays the Pan pipes and he prances around in the forest. Yeah. And
he's got little cloven hooves.
Yeah. And he's kind of, you know, like the trickster in the book. And he sort of he eggs everybody on in their quest for immortality, which, you know, like he's a god. So he's already immortal. And he kind of gets to play around with the different characters in these different eras, these different ages that are part of the story.
Yeah. He's got his own angle.
He's just a horny little half-deer in the forest.
He really knows how to please all the women, and there's a very explicit scene about that.
Yes.
But Pan is also, in a way, which reminded me of a book we discovered much later, of American Gods. Yeah. He wants people to, like, remember, like, him and the old gods, and he's sort of painted in this telling as, like, a god of pleasure. So, you know.
And that, I think Pan, if I'm not, I mean, my paganism may be showing here, but are Pan and Bacchus not oftentimes, like, the same imagery, like, the same kind of...
I think they
kind
of go together.
Yeah, they're,
sure,
like, either
Pan's,
buddies.
Like, in the forest, and,
like,
you know, once
like
again.
It's like one big drunken orgy when Pan and Bacchus are hanging out.
It's true.
Yeah.
True.
So, if that doesn't tell you everything you need to know about the story, shifting slightly from Pan and Bacchus, what do we love about it from a church drunk perspective? From our, I mean, obviously we love Pan and Bacchus, but, like, when you think about it as spiritual nourishment for those of perhaps a more traditional persuasion.
Right. Well, any traditionally religious person will tell you, in the Christian sense at least, like, you know, we're looking for salvation, which to us would be immortality.
Immortality,
right? Like,
exactly.
You're going to live forever in heaven.
Yeah.
Whatever that means.
Yep.
And how do you get there, right? That's, like, the search of, I would say, like, most people would say, like, Christianity, right? Like, that's our whole hope of life after death and be around forever. And this book is seeking the same things.
Yeah. And that's, I think I really appreciate, it makes me appreciate the fact that, that for me, my Catholic faith is rooted in things that are, sort of universal truths or universal quests for life and knowledge and wisdom and these things. And, like, immortality has so many different facets to it in terms of, you know, like, the kings of the olden days were, like, questing after immortality. You know, they're looking for the cup of Christ that they think will grant them immortality.
Sure. Yeah.
And there's a whole sort of, like, legend perspective to it. But when you sit in church on Sunday and you recite the prayers that are from the Mass, you're talking about immortality. You talk a lot about life everlasting.
Right.
And we just kind of get so accustomed to it, you know, like...
Sure.
One God, the Father, the All, blah, 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 blah. You know, I believe in life everlasting, the resurrection of the body, if you're doing the Apostles' Creed, right? And the,
life
all these
of the world to come. Amen.
Just kind of keep coming out of us in like this monotonous sort of way. But when you really sit down and think about it, like the foundations of the faith are people who are interested in living forever. And I love a story that flips that concept on its head, you know, like the immortality, like going to heaven and living forever with God may not be what is in store when you talk about immortality.
What if you had to, quote unquote, work out your salvation for hundreds of years here?
Exactly.
Sure.
And in the end, like, Jesus was one of those people that took the concept of immortality and flipped the script, like, kind of said, we need to think about this differently. We need to talk about this differently. You know, the early Christian communities were persecuted because they had different ideas about what immortality was going
to
mean.
Yeah. And if it means something different to you, how do you go about finding that?
Mm-hmm.
Another reason why I think this is a good book for the church drunk reading list is that it deals with something that I think just from looking at our books, we are kind of wanting or seeking, which is mysticism.
Yes.
This book really embraces mystery. And I think the older we get, if we are actually wrestling with our faith and trying to make it an adult faith, you have to become more and more comfortable with mystery.
Right.
And letting go of the pat answers of what happens when you die or exactly how do you get there.
Right.
You know, this is a book that makes you a little uncomfortable in that because there's no one answer and it's not necessarily a happy ending.
Yeah.
Although it's like a very pleasing ending in the mystery sense.
It is.
And I think that is something that God and that Jesus really encourages us to embrace.
Yeah.
Like, you don't really get to know it all. Like, any preacher can get up there, any religion can say, this is what it's going to be like. But if you are a believer, if you want to look at the Gospels, Jesus is really careful not to say anything. You know, think about parables and the afterlife is exactly going to be like this.
Yeah.
It's more like be in this moment and embrace it and do these good things.
Yeah. Well, and I do love about this book that it connects that sense of mystery. And it really is. I mean, it's a rollicking ride. It is this crazy long thing. And it's also steeped in something that is so fantastical that you'll never really truly unravel it. Like, we were joking getting ready for this about, like, okay, so we've had a book about baseball and time travel. We've had a book about an alternate timeline where the Jews got Sitka, Alaska. We had one about cheeky little angels and demons and the four horsemen of the apocalypse. Like, there's all these different stories, and now we get to the weird one. This is officially the weirdest book on the list.
Right. I think the little caption for this summer's reading list, like, Disney and guests is play escapist.
Right.
Like,
yeah, totally.
Take us out of here.
But at the same time, what I do love about it from a particularly a Catholic perspective, this book is like, there is mystery at every turn. You know, the whole thing is this mystery that you won't unravel. And yet it's rooted in something very, like, sensory, you know, like, it is connected
to
the real world. So, and that's something that us Catholics pride ourselves
on,
that, like, you can't just live in the clouds. You also have to be part of the real world. And I do think that's something that I enjoy about the writing of Tom Robbins, is that there is a sense that you can have one foot in the great beyond, but you can't keep it there unless you have one foot firmly planted in what's happening right here and now.
Right. Even down to the incense. Would you like to smell something?
Yeah, right.
Will this help take you somewhere else?
Exactly. Yeah. The smell will carry you to something greater. Yeah.
It's encouraging that embrace of mystery. Mm-hmm. And really, personally, that's what I want from religion.
Yeah.
You know, I want something bigger or more wonderful than I can understand.
Yeah. Point me to something
that's
bigger.
That's the whole point.
Yeah. All right. So it's a great book for anyone who has maybe read a couple of other Tom Robbins and really wants to just take a deep dive into what Dizzy considers to be his finest work.
Yes.
I do too. I think maybe objectively
it's
probably his best. I think subjectively it's not the first one that I read and maybe will never be my favorite.
I think it's sort of his, probably like his greatest work.
It's
like, he put it all into it and it's so expansive. It's not usually the one that I recommend as somebody who has not read Tom Robbins.
Yeah, don't necessarily start with this one if you haven't read Robbins before.
Or just be prepared to, like, really take your time.
Right.
Like, you do not have to rush through this book.
Yeah.
There is no point to get to the end.
Still Life with Woodpecker is probably his most famous book. Like, that's where most people might start Still Life with Woodpecker. Okay.
But that's kind of like a weird one, too.
Well, they're all weird. It's Tom Robbins.
Oh, yeah.
So if you like weird...
Yeah, weird.
Read some Tom Robbins, get into Jitterbug Perfume. If you want to really explore the concept of transcendental immortality, get into some Jitterbug Perfume.
I have to give a shout out to one of the best passages in this book. Yeah. If you have a fondness for root vegetables, particularly the beet, there is a lovely ode to beets,
there is
which is alone worth reading.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, if you have an open mind and just are ready to be along for a wordsmith just roller coaster.
If the news, both church and secular, makes you want to go elsewhere.
Yes.
You could go into the world of Jitterbug Perfume.
Yeah. And actually, as you mentioned, the news wanting to get away from stuff. You know, like we decided weeks ago that we were going to be doing our summer reading list as our episode of Church, or our season of Church Drunk. But there is so much going on in the world and in the world of the church that we certainly want those of you who listen to know, like, we will be getting into that.
Yeah, it's on our minds, on our hearts.
Yeah, so we will certainly be tackling some of what's going on with the church scandals and all that badness.
You probably already know how we feel about it.
Once we're ready to get away from summertime, which I don't think either of us are ready for that mentally.
Let's cling with our little clawed hands as long as we can to our fiction list.
Exactly.
We've got two more books on it.
Two more books. Yeah. And then we'll move on with life. So,
cool. All right.
It's time for a big question from the question box.
I think it's your turn to pick, dude. Turn? I picked last time.
Pick a good one. Says,
oh my goodness.
Should your, I don't know what.
Should you preview beforehand? I know. We do this authentically.
Should all jobs require a uniform of some sort?
Whoa.
What an interesting question. Is this you?
No. Huh. Oh. No. That's a Mrs. Guess.
It might be Mrs. Guess.
I think it is.
Should all jobs require a uniform of some sort?
I mean.
Is she like a closet communist that I don't know about? Like,
you know, she has had a lot of experience in places where people wear uniforms. Yeah. So that might be, interesting. I mean,
like, let's think about jobs that do require a uniform of some sort. Like, things like a mechanic or a janitor tend to wear a uniform, but that's
medical
because they get very dirty.
Medical
professionals
get
getting very dirty. Athletes have a uniform.
Yes.
To identify them as such.
Law enforcement, fire, public service.
I guess there's a lot of them that wear uniforms.
I mean, and you could take it, say, like, well, people in any do sort of wear a uniform. Like, there's an accepted sort of dress, usually, for any place of employment.
Most places. And, you know, like, the uniform, if you work in an office in the Silicon Valley, is going to be very different than the uniform if you work in an office in New York, you know?
True.
Sometimes
or
the
school.
Same profession will have different things.
I mean, if we
board.
Think about why are people required to wear uniforms, usually adults, it is functionality.
Yeah.
Or maybe like tradition for certain office, you know, fields.
Yeah.
But we make kids wear uniforms because we think it makes them behave better.
Yeah, it makes them behave better.
And maybe that's true for adults too. Like you act, I mean, there's studies about like if you're wearing something, you actually act somewhat differently.
And in the professional world, something that's different than a school uniform is that it usually has your name on it, right? Like,
oh,
it's
true.
You have a name tag or a name badge or something that says who you are. So, like, your actions have your name attached to them right from the get-go.
And, you know, if we totally left this one out of the first round, but, like, you know, we're Catholics. Like, our clergy wears a uniform.
They definitely do.
To different, you know, degrees or styles. But and they don't wear name tags, which maybe is a suggestion for another time.
Like, pretty much everybody in the service industry, like hotels and restaurants and all that kind of stuff. Like, I guess I am in the minority in that I've never had a job where I had to wear a uniform.
True. Yeah. But you've had,
I've had to wear like a company polo.
Something with it,
You know, but like never like a full-on uniform.
I mean, this was an opinion one. Do you think that we should require it as somebody who does not wear a uniform?
I mean, as my initial reaction to it was like, no. Like, what kind of fascist world is it where everybody would have to wear a uniform, right? Like, I envision like people that wear uniforms, like, march down Main Street and, like, salute their leader.
We're getting closer every day.
I know, right? So my natural reaction was like, no. But then when I really think about how many professions do already wear one, I suppose the world wouldn't look that much different if everybody did have to wear one. And it, frankly, in some lines of work, might clear up, like, little bit of, like, necessary professionalism, right? If you lose the ability to just pick your own clothes, then you're never going to be wearing something that doesn't meet the standards of people that are expecting you to look a certain way. I don't know.
I don't know either.
I've gone from a hard no to a maybe just over the course of our brief conversation.
Yeah, you really swung there. I don't really know. I don't really care if you wear a uniform or not. I'm more curious as to why this question was posed.
Right?
Was she thinking about, you know, I'm thinking like church drunk, like thinking like clergy wise. Like,
yeah.
Should you all have to wear a uniform? I don't know.
Like, it is kind of scary sometimes. Well, not scary. Well, maybe it is scary, again, yeah. given what's going on in the church. But, like, when you see a priest that's not wearing the priest uniform, you're kind of like, what are you doing?
Well, and now, see, I feel opposite because I've spent a lot of time around a lot of priests.
Right.
Shocking, I'm sure, who don't wear clerics most of the time.
Right.
And for me,
most of my favorites,
that makes me feel a little more comfortable because I may be inferring something about their lack of uniform, which just brings us back to the original, you know, what's the purpose of them.
Right. Well, so, and also, like, priests wear their uniform, like, many priests wear their uniform 24/7.
Yeah.
Like, they are never out in public without having something that identifies them as a priest.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, every other profession, as soon as you're done with work, you put on regular clothes.
Right.
So
you
that's
get to,
kind
you get
of
to
an
have, like, different.
Statement.
Well, but that ties into their job as a different kind of job.
Right.
Right. You don't, like, clock out.
But maybe everybody should have a uniform that identifies them as their specific profession. All the time. You never get to wear your own clothes.
Dude, so I am, like, fully against that.
When
nope.
you go
nope.
when you go to, like,
hard pass.
A weekend barbecue, you never have to ask anyone ever again, like, oh, hey, so what do you do for a living? Like, you will see from the uniform, like, I'm a cop, dumbass. Like, what do you think I am?
Yeah. Yeah. Stop asking stupid questions.
Right.
All right. Well, that was enlightening.
Interesting. Cool.
Or at least gives us more to ponder.
Yeah. Well, you tell us what you think, dear listeners.
Yes.
Should all jobs require a uniform?
Also, are you going to read Jitterbug Perfume?
Yes. So tell us about what you think of Tom Robbins' Jitterbug Perfume if you are a Tom Robbins fan. Tell us about what's on your summer reading list if
yes.
you guys have been tackling that. We're getting close to the end
I know.
Of summer.
Technical,
tears rolling
actual
down
seasonal
my
summer.
Face.
If you read anything on our reading list or what you think should be on a future reading list, you could email us at churchdrunk@gmail.com.
Yep.
You could tweet at guests at churchdrunkpod. You can check out the blog, churchdrunk.com.
Yep.
I don't know if I already said that one, but that's
churchdrunk.com.
Yep.
So let us know what you think. Let us know if there's any books that you have read this summer that you think deserve mention on our summer reading list.
Drink something fragrant at the very least.
And we will be back next week with 13 Clocks.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. It is a short read, one that you could certainly hear us mentioning right now. Pick up and read between now and the time we do our next podcast.
Homework.
So we'll be tackling that. And that'll get us up through the second to last book on our Church Trunk reading list for summer.
And then we'll have to talk about real things.
Now, real world. Boo.
Boo. Well, thanks for listening to Church Trunk.
Church Trunk, where immortality is found in the bottom of a glass with some ice and a lovely tinkle to it.
Inhale deeply.
Mm.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Bye.